This program is a part of the Full Press Radio Network. Find this and all of Full Press Coverage's shows on fullpressradio.com or free on the Full Press Coverage app, available now on the Apple and Google Play stores.
This is Reggie Wayne, and you're listening to the Eye Test for Two.
Well, Happy New Year, guys. This is the first Eye Test for Two podcast of 2023, and to celebrate the occasion, we have a new class of Hall of Fame finalists. Now, Ira, there are, as you know, 15 of them, chosen from the 28 semifinalists that we discussed last week with historian John Turney, and they were revealed on the NFL Network. Now, in case you missed it, these are your 15 modern era finalists for the class of 2023. Defensive end Jared Allen, offensive tackle Willie Anderson, cornerback Rondé Barber, presented by our own Ira Kaufman, linebacker Dwight Freeney, kick returner Devin Hester, wide receiver Torrey Holt, wide receiver Andre Johnson, cornerback Albert Lewis. Hooray, Ira, huh? Albert Lewis, he made the cut.
That's something to celebrate, yes.
Yeah, first-time finalist last year, modern era eligibility. That's great. Cornerback Darrell Revis, offensive tackle Joe Thomas, linebacker Zach Thomas, linebacker DeMarcus Ware, linebacker Patrick Willis, wide receiver Reggie Wayne, and safety Darren Woodson, also his first time as a finalist. Ira, your immediate reaction when you saw this list?
Clark, it's a very exciting time for me personally, and a nerve-wracking time for me personally. And Clark, as you've noted many times on this show, Ira, it seems like you're always given a presentation, sometimes multiple presentations. And Clark, you're right. I started with Ed Sable in 2011, and then starting with Sapp in 2013, Clark, there's never been a year gone by when I haven't had at least one finalist to present. That's a long time.
Wow. Clark,
that's a long time.
That may be a Hall of Fame record.
And of course, John Lynch took up 8 of those years.
Right.
He did.
Right.
So for me personally, Clark, it's a nervous time because now that I know Rondé Barber, as he should be, is back in the room for the third straight year, I got to get my house in order. Now, Clark, I got 5 minutes to present a 15-year career. Not easy. And you've made your presentation, so you know. As far as these 15 are concerned, Clark, what position leads the league? Defensive back. Four.
Yeah, right.
Four defensive backs. Three receivers, three edge, two linebackers, two tackles, offensive, one kick returner. 9 defensive players, Clark. That makes today's guest very happy. And we'll get into that later in the show.
It does make him very happy. But
as far as a disappointment, Clark, for me, and again, we'll talk more about it, Hines Ward, and I think I speak for you too. Can't we get this man in the room, Clark? Can't we just get him in the room and talk about him a little bit? I don't get it.
It seems like the answer is no. I mean, he's been a 7-time semifinalist. I don't know what the hangup is, but I want to ask you, because you referenced that about your third straight year for presenting Rondé Barber. People out there don't understand, that's a tough spot to come back again and again to present the same candidate, because after a while, your listeners are going, wait a minute, I heard this last year, and I heard the year before. Each year, all right, you've got to come up with something new, right? I mean, it presents a real difficulty for the presenter.
It does. You can't, and that's why I've been talking to different people. I'm not going to flood the zone with quotes in 5 minutes, but, you know, a couple of choice quotes goes a long way, Clark. But, you know, last year I got Chris Carter and Andy Reid, and this year I'm going to get a couple of different people. And you emphasize some different things. And as today's guest always tells me, Clark, and you and I have learned, listen to this man. He knows what he's talking about in terms of Canton. Clark, the word he uses, hook. You got to find the right hook for your candidate.
Right.
And he's gotten a lot of guys in. And Rondé Barber's a walking hook, Clark. He is. And you know that.
I do.
You want to talk about this hit. You want to talk about his durability. You want to talk about his playmaking. And Clark, I'm going to give you and our listeners a quick preview, 1 point preview. And Clark, don't hold this against me in the room.
This isn't going to go 5 minutes, is it, Ira?
Clark, I was talking to Todd Bowles about this a couple of weeks ago at One Buck Place. And I said, hey, help me with my barber presentation. And we went over some of the stats, you know, the first, you know, 45 interception, 20 sack guy, blah, blah, 15 years without missing a game. Then I said, he scored 14 touchdowns. And Todd Bowles said, stop right there. 14 touchdowns as a cornerback. That is what you emphasize. He's a playmaker. And you know what, Clark? He's right. He's right.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I think when we had, was it John Turney on?
Yeah.
Not last week, but maybe months ago. One of the things he mentioned was it's what you do after you have the ball. You know, you know who it was? It was Henry Ellard. Henry Ellard talked about what you do after you have the ball. He was talking about wide receivers, but the same thing with defensive backs. What do you do with it after you have it? 14 touchdowns. I mean, that's a powerful, powerful number. And Ira, I know that you sort of alluded to this, not sort of, but you did, about surprises and disappointments. And we mentioned Ward, but are you surprised that Albert Lewis made it? And I'll be honest with you, I'm not so much, because when we had Tony Dungy on here and he said what he said about him being one of the top five cornerbacks of all time, I thought that's going to play. And it did. It got actually a lot of national recognition.
No question. And Clark, don't forget also what Coach Dungy said was, you know, he made a grade for all of his players after each game. And he said Albert Lewis graded the highest of anybody that he's ever coached.
Right.
And that includes the offensive players. It includes Peyton Manning. And that is a remarkable attribute right there.
And it includes Derek Brooks, first ballot Hall of Famer.
Are you telling me to give Brooks his gold jacket back, Clark? Is that what you're telling him?
So, Ira, I want to get deeper into this discussion. So, you know what? As we did in November, when the 28 semifinalists were named, we've asked Hall of Fame voter Rick Goose Goslin to join what now becomes, Ira, I guess, the eye test for three, right?
Why not?
Yeah. Hey, Goose, thanks so much for being here. And I guess I'll ask you the first question. What were your surprises and disappointments with this list of 15 finalists?
Well, I was surprised that Jerry Evans wasn't there. I thought he was a strong first ballot candidate. I was disappointed that Henry Ellard didn't make it. I would like to have seen Henry in the room one time in his 20 years of eligibility. I think he was deserving of the discussion. And I was pleasantly surprised to see Albert Lewis on the ballot.
Now, how about Darren Woodson? I mean, you're a Dallas guy.
Woodson, but this is Lewis's last year. Woodson, I think it's he's 10, 15 years into it. Here's a guy that I thought should have been an all-decade player. And they gave it to Ronnie Lott, who played, I think, 5 years the decade, was at the back end of his career. Woodson plays, wins 3 Super Bowls in a decade, was among the first coverage safeties the NFL has seen. He's franchise all-time leading tackler. He's long overdue, but again, you guys both know the difficulties safeties historically have had of not only getting in the room, but getting in again.
Goose, I want to revisit a conversation we had with you, I think, the last time. Mm-hmm. That's Hines Ward. Hines Ward's a seven-time semifinalist, but he just can't get any traction. And I don't know if he's forever lost, because now there were 7 wide receivers among the semifinalists, 8 if you count Devin Hester. And he can't get out of the morass of wide receivers. What's the problem with Hines?
I don't know what the problem is. I mean, he's of the all the receivers we're talking about, the 4 or 5 that are on the ballot, he's the only guy that ranks in the top 20 in catches, yards, and touchdowns. He's been a Super Bowl MVP. He's got a ring. You know, Andre Johnson doesn't have a ring. He checks all the boxes to be a Hall of Famer, but he can't get in the room. And I'm just puzzled by that, because again, as the only guy in the top 20 in all 3 of the categories, he deserves probably to be in here more than the other 3 guys do.
Goose, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but I'm right there with you and Clark on Hines Ward. And I'll tell you why, Rick. The name of the show is the eye test. That's the name of the show. And I think Hines Ward epitomizes that. You can knock down this, yards and yards per catch or whatever. Goose, he was a great football player. He was a Hall of Fame football player for anybody that saw him. And you can't quantify the blocks downfield, and you can't quantify playing through injury and making big plays in the biggest games. So I'm with you on that, Goose. This Hines Ward thing, it's puzzling. It's quite disappointing. Goose, I'm looking at the list of 15, the fine 15. A smile to your face, 9 defensive players, 6 offensive players. That goes along right with the Gosselin doctrine.
We could use a few more defenders in the slate.
Goose, when the final 5 finally make it and get their bust, I got to think more than a few will be from the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I think Joe Thomas probably has the best resume of the entire class. And I'm wondering if this is one of the year we finally break the logjam at wide receiver. And I don't see more than 2 offensive guys getting in. So, yeah, there should be the other 3 spots should go defensive players, which is, again, you could probably give 6 spots to defensive players and feel good about this class.
Goose, talk about Devin Hester for a minute in your mind. I've heard, all the presentations about Devin Hester. But I still, in my mind, Rick, I'm not convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt that he's even the best returner in history. I mean, I don't think that's a fact.
Well, he's got the touchdowns, and that's key. And, he's a guy that passes the eye test. But too few people on the committee have seen Billy White choose Johnson play. Here's a guy who was picked the 75th and 100th anniversary teams. He's never been discussed. He's never been to semifinals. He's never been in the room. And I find it hard to believe you can jump Hester over Johnson with his accolades. There's no guarantee Hester gets in for the same reason Billy Johnson is still on the outside looking in. But both Hester and Johnson passed the eye test. And it's puzzling why Johnson's never been discussed and Hester's not in the room for the second time.
We're speaking with Hall of Fame voter Rick Goslin on the eye test for 2. And Goose Man, since you mentioned Devin Hester, the fact that he got into the top 10 last year as a first ballot choice, top 10, wasn't just the 15 who made the first cut. Doesn't that bode well for the future and maybe the immediate future? I understand what the history is, especially. And you're right about Billy White Shoes Johnson. We got Brian Mitchell too. But this guy seems to sort of resonate with the voters. We were talking about why Hines Ward doesn't. This guy does. And I was shocked that he went from 15 to 10 last year. Doesn't that bode well for him for the immediate future? And
yeah, because the voting board has gotten so much younger.
Yeah.
And as we've mentioned in the past with the demise of newspapers, a lot of the older guys, the Ira Millers and the Vito Stellinos and the Don Pearsons have moved on. And a lot of the younger voters started covering the game in the 90s and 2000s. And they've all seen Devin Hester play. They haven't seen White Shoes Johnson. They haven't seen Brian Mitchell. They haven't seen Dave May. They haven't seen Dante Hall, people like that. So they've seen Hester, and they like what they saw from Hester, but they didn't see the other guys. And I think this is a reflection of the youth of the voting board.
Yeah, and I think also the power of television. Yeah. You mentioned Joe Thomas as maybe the most qualified guy on this ballot. So I think there's an assumption and probably an agreement that he's going to be a first ballot choice. But how about Darrell Revis? I mean, there's sort of a feeling that he's going to be a first ballot choice also. And the reason I ask you about this, Goose, is you talked at the outset about Albert Lewis and how gratified you were he was to be in this list. But he's one of 3 defensive backs. We've got Revis. I've been talking about 3 actually cornerbacks, 4 defensive backs. We've got Revis as a corner, Rondé Barber, who will be presented by Ira Kaufman as a corner, and Albert Lewis, but Albert Lewis is in the last year of his eligibility. So there's an urgency there, but I don't see us getting 3 cornerbacks into the same class. So what's your feeling about Revis? And are you a first ballot guy for Darrell Revis? You're in his corner.
Well, again, we've talked about this in the past. I'm a little stronger on first ballot. I think there have been maybe 10, 15 first ballot Hall of Famers in history, and everybody else can wait a year. Jim Brown, Johnny Unitas, Dick Butkus, Joe Green, people like that. Taylor, Jerry Rice. Well, Mike Haynes and Night Train Lane were both picked to the 100th anniversary team. Mike Haynes was a third ballot selection, and Night Train was a fourth ballot selection. Do I take Darrell Revis over Mike Haynes or Night Train? No. So I don't necessarily see the rush that we've got in the last 10 years of putting all these first ballot guys in. I mean, everybody in the slate can wait. And if you look at, if you watch Joe Thomas compared to Anthony Munoz, you know, is that the same player? I don't know that it is. And I think Anthony Munoz was a first ballot Hall of Famer. But we've got this urge to make everybody a first ballot Hall of Famer. And I think some of these guys can wait. And, you know, you look at Lombardi, was an all-decade player. He waited 10 years. And he's a guy that also returned kicks. So, Revis got 29 interceptions. And they say, well, they didn't throw it to Revis. Well, they didn't throw it to Albert Lewis. He had 42. They didn't throw it to Deion. He had 54.
Right.
So I don't think Revis is a slam-dunk first ballot guy.
Well, the reason I ask you also is because there's going to be a strong voice of support in that room for Albert Lewis. And that's not just you, but it's going to be a guy who coached him in Kansas City, and that's Tony Dungy. And he's been on this broadcast before saying he considers Albert Lewis one of the five best cornerbacks of all time. And I think, Ira, you can refresh my memory, but I think he said, yeah, over Darrell Revis. So there's going to be a powerful voice within that room, speaking of Albert Lewis, because this guy who coached him.
I covered Albert Lewis. I was there when he was drafted, and I covered his first 8 seasons. And he's as good a cover corner as I've ever seen. I saw him break up slants from the outside, which you don't see. You know, most guys try to jump it. He got it from the outside. He was all arms and legs. And, you know, John Turney had the great note that the game that Warren Moon threw for 500 yards against the Chiefs, he was 0 for 6 when he went directly at Albert Lewis. This guy was a shutdown corner. And as some people have told me, if he had played New York, it would have been Lewis Island.
Mm-hmm. Goose, 3 edge rushers, Rick, one of them you're personally involved in, DeMarcus Ware. Jared Allen, Rick, back again. Can't seem to get much traction. We have a newcomer in Dwight Freeney. Goose, I'm going to ask you directly about Jared Allen. What's the holdup? Doesn't seem to be much momentum for him. What's going on with Jared Allen, Rick?
Okay. 67% of everyone in Canton won a championship. Jared Allen didn't win a championship. 75% of everybody in Canton was an all-decade player. Jared Allen was not an all-decade player. He's got the stats, but he's without the all-decade, without the ranks. And if you just look at history, it's tougher for those guys to get in. You look at guys like, you know, Claude Humphrey, who wasn't all-decade, and he slides. Elvin Bethea. Well, those guys both got it, were great pass rushers, edge rushers, got in as seniors because they didn't win championships and they weren't all-decade. I think that's what's working against Jared Allen.
Maybe Carl Eller's in that category too, because I'm not sure he was an all-decade player.
And I look at Freeney. I was surprised Freeney got it over Mathis. Mathis, you know, holds the NFL record, 54 forced fumbles. He had 2 fewer sacks than Freeney in 26 fewer games. But I think this highlights the power of the draft. Freeney was a first-round selection, and Mathis, I believe, was a fifth-rounder. And I think that's why he got in. But, you know, given a choice, I might go Freeney over Mathis.
Mathis over Freeney. Rick, I want to ask you about another defensive player. Got some compelling arguments. Powerful. That's Patrick Willis. Rick, 5-time first-team All-Pro. Last time I looked, he only played 7 full seasons, Rick. 7. But the first-team All-Pro is strong. No question about it. What do you see as the future for Patrick Willis and a gold jacket?
You know who also was a 5-time first-team All-Pro? Zach Thomas.
He was.
Do you see 2 middle linebackers going in this class?
No.
And I think, again, they may cancel each other out again. You know, both these guys have been in the room. Both were all decade. Both went to 7 Pro Bowls. Both were 5-time first team all decade. Neither won a championship. Again, I think it'll be a toss-up in the room. I think half the room will go for Willis and half the room will go for Thomas.
You think eventually there'll be good news for Patrick Willis, Goose, down the line?
Yeah, you know, you think that, but the longer a guy slides, the more you wonder. You know, a guy like Will Shields, I thought had as good a resume as any first ballot Hall of Famer in the last 15 years. It took him almost 10 years to get in.
Yeah.
It's tough to say. You know, they're every year, and again, with the rush to put in these first ballot guys, you want to put in, you know, Thomas and Rivas first ballot guys, then you're leaving a lot of veteran guys who've been in the room. You're pushing them back another year. You know, and like Bob Kuchenberg, all of a sudden, one year they disappear and they wind up in the senior pool. They're just, again, the problem is that there are too many qualified candidates and not enough seats at the table.
I'm glad you mentioned Will Shields because Clark and I remember when Shields came up for the first time as a finalist, Clark and I looked at each other and we said, this is one of the great resumes we've ever seen.
Right.
And
right.
Rick, I believe he had to go three times in the room as a finalist.
Four. He was a four-time finalist.
Yeah.
But again, he offensive lineman didn't win a championship. And those are the issues. If he was a stat guy, you know, stat guys have the advantage over offensive linemen. And, you know, Joe Thomas, because of the 10 Pro Bowl, six first-team All-Pros, you know, he's got an edge. But most of these linemen, the Jari Evanses and the Willie Andersons, you know, they don't have stats. And it's tough for the voters to see, you know, the value of the player if there are no stats.
Plus, he didn't have Ira Kaufman presenting him either.
I'm waiting for the Barber filibuster.
Well, on this show, or you mean 2 weeks?
It's been going on for 3 years.
Hey, Goose, I want to go back to, you know, Freddie Mathis you mentioned, because I was going to ask you about that. But to me, it goes back to what you were saying about sort of the resume and what's on your resume. Freddie was an all-decade player. Mathis was not. And maybe, just maybe, that resonates as well.
I think more of Dwight Freeney came in with all the fanfare and had a great rookie season and has been a great player throughout. Robert Mathis, late round draft pick, was a designated pass rusher first couple of years. Didn't start until I think his third season. Mm-hmm. And I've seen it time and time again. The first round guys get favorable treatment than guys who are taking second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, 10th, 12th, 15th round. I think that's the issue. Freeney was a first rounder. People have known him longer, and Mathis was not. And again, Mathis led the league in sacks 1 year. He had a 20-sack season. I think he's a Hall of Famer. He had 17 fumble recoveries. Freeney had four. The 54 forced fumbles are a record. I just, it puzzles me why Mathis hasn't been isn't in this class.
I know that Ira asked you about the linebackers, and there are four of them in this class of finalists, but there are also four wide receivers, if you count Devin Hester as a wide receiver, which I think we don't. He's a return specialist. So there are three. And there were three last year. They're the same three again, Johnson, Holt, and then you've got Wayne. So you've the same three. Holt and Wayne didn't have any legs last year. They didn't have any legs the year before or the year before that. Andre Johnson jumps to the top 10 in 2022. How do you see that thing shaking out, Goose? Because somebody's got to break this logjam. At some point, it's going to get to be an extended length of people. And I think we saw that with the semifinalists when there were seven of them and eight, if you include Hester.
We had this before, you know, go back to the Monk, Irvin, mm-hmm. Carter, and Reed right. class, where those fleet of four guys, then they all cancel each other out.
Right.
I think Holt and Wayne have the issue that not many teams have two wide receivers from the same club in the Hall of Fame. There are four, and all those teams were either multi-championship or multi-championship appearance. The Swan and Stallworth won four. Lavelli and Speedy in Cleveland won nine or something ridiculous number. You know, Wayne and Holt were the secondary receivers behind Isaac Bruce and
Marvin Harrison.
Marvin Harrison.
Yeah.
It's tough to get a second guy in off teams that won one Super
right.
Bowl.
Right.
If this was a team that won three times and they had, you know, one of the two or three greatest quarterbacks of all time throwing passes to him. And this is not getting passes from Steve Bono on Marty Schottenheimer's Chiefs. they've got the stats, but the one ring, you know, and the fact that, you know, Wayne wasn't even all decade.
Yeah.
It's a tough call. Again, I think these two guys especially cancel each other out. Well, I guess that's why Johnson jumped ahead of him last year.
And
these guys, it's tough to differentiate between Wayne and Holt.
I mentioned we had John Turney on last week, and we did. And he thought that Johnson might be the guy to break that logjam this year, that he gets into the top five. I disagree. Ira thinks he's on the bubble. Where are you?
I'm not sure there's a wide receiver in his class. Right. Again, Andre Johnson, no championships, didn't make all decade. I don't know.
He's got 70 touchdown catches, because 70.
Yeah, but this isn't Monk, Irvin, Carter, and Reed, this group. Yeah.
And Tim Brown.
This is a stat-driven position. We're getting a lot of guys in with stats. But I don't, you know, when you talk about the eye test, Monk, Irvin, Carter, and Reed all pass the eye test for me. I'm not sure that these guys do.
Goose, last one for me. And this is a particular topic I'm a little passionate about, and I'm not
Ronnie
sure
Barber. How you feel about it.
Rick, you mentioned, I think it was, 75% of the guys with the gold jackets have won a championship?
No, 67. 75 all decade.
It's still two out of three, Rick.
Right.
Historically. And Rick, my point, and you know, maybe you disagree, other than voting for a coach, head coach, or a quarterback, I'm not sure that's fair to hold that against somebody that's playing guard or safety, that your team didn't win a championship. Goose, I don't really think that's fair.
No, we decided that you can't be a great player on a bad team, which is why Alex Karras waited 45 years, Les Richter waited 43 years, Chris Hamburger waited 28 years, Paul Humphrey waited 25 years.
And Tommy Nobis may never get in. That's right.
I mean, Dave Wilcox, 21, and here's Joe Klecko. He's been waiting 30 years. Chuck Howley, you know, 45 years. This Ken Riley, 35 years. I just don't get the logic that you can't be a great player on a bad team. But that's what this Hall of Fame has decided. The numbers are clear. 67%, two out of three guys won championships. And that's being unfair to a lot of great players that had the misfortune, like Tommy Nobis, of being drafted by a terrible franchise or expansion franchise.
Goose, nevertheless, that said, Joe Thomas was a great player on a bad team. He's going to be a first ballot choice.
Sure. Yes. He's got the best resume.
Yeah. Last one from me. Do you expect a surprise this year? I mean, I think I could cut this thing to four pretty easily right now with a fifth as an X factor, but I think I know who I'd put in there. We had a surprise last year. We had Sam Mills get in his last year of eligibility. The year before that, we had Clay Matthews in his last year of eligibility, and he was a first-time finalist. And he got into the top 10. That was a surprise to me. Do you see a surprise in this group? And if so, who is it?
Well, potentially Albert Lewis. You know, if you wanted to go with a real surprise in the final five, you know, Devin Hester would be a guy who would shock a lot of people.
Right.
He's in the class. But I think that the guy out of the blue is Albert Lewis, getting into the room first time in 20 years. You know, the year before Clay Matthews, we had Everson Walls in the room for the first time in 20 years. I thought he had a Hall of Fame resume, and he didn't get in.
Right.
So it's tough when you just show up for the first time in your last year. I think you'll get support, but often not enough support. But I think if Lewis got in, that would be a shock.
Yeah, I agree with it, because he's also got to navigate that congested field, and that's with Revis and Ronde Barber. So that's going to be tough. Right. Rick Goslin, thanks so much. I know you have to run, but thanks for the time. Really enjoy it. And thanks for the education.
Okay, guys. Take care.
That was Hall of Fame voter Rick Goslin. And Ira, we should let our listeners know that we're going to meet in 2 weeks to vote on the class of 2023. And we're also going to vote that day on the contributor candidate, who is Don Coryell, and the seniors, who are Joe Klecko, who was mentioned, Chuck Howley, and Ken Riley. I think all four of those guys, and I'm talking about Coryell, Klecko, Howley, and Riley, are going to make it. I'm with Goose, and probably you, Ira. I think Lewis has got a shot here. I don't think he crosses the finish line only because of those two that are in front of him. How about you? And I realize you're biased on this because you're presenting one of them, but maybe it's Rivas who steps back, and that would be maybe a surprise to most people.
That would be the absolute shocker, Clark. You're right about Lewis. He's lurking. He's lurking. And as we saw last year, you know, that last year of eligibility asterisk, it carries a little bit of weight. Not always, but it certainly did last year. Certainly.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's right.
Wait a minute. I'm hearing something. I'm over here. Clark, where were you?
I was right here. I was at home. I was home on August 2021. I was here. I was doing anything. Oh, wait, I was doing something. I was on the contributor vote Zoom call for the class of 2022. And we had a list of, I'm going to guess, 11, 12 contributor candidates. And essentially came down to three people. And Rick Olson was on that board at that time. He was one of the contributor judges. So was I. There were five people within that room or on that call. And so we were considering that group. We kept cutting him down. We cut him down to three. And then because there was a tie, we kept doing that, get him down to two. We got him down to two. And one was an NFL owner. The other was Art McNally, the director of officiating, who retired years ago. In the end, Art won, and I was so happy that I ran out to talk to my wife, who had worked in the office with Art then, and we were so happy because, as was pointed out there, and Rick was a voice of support, and it was a very close vote, but we're so happy because Art was still alive. He was 96, he was going to turn 97 the following summer. He got into the class of 2022, and he wasn't able to go there. But he was acknowledged, and I thought it was tremendous. And I was so happy when we saw that video of him on the NFL Network when Paul Tagliabue came to tell him. And I know my wife was too. As I said, she knew him, and she started to cry when she saw him. She said, "He's such a gentleman." And she said to me today, "He may be the only guy I know where nobody can say a bad word about him. Nobody." And when I talk to people about doing the presentation, they all mentioned the word integrity. It came up every time. They weren't cued on it. No one said anything about, "You got to talk," everything about him. And I mention that because Art McNally died this Monday at the age of 97, the oldest living Hall of Famer.
You're right, Clark. That video of Tagliabue coming into his house, fantastic. And he didn't know about it until Tags told him. And you could see the emotion for Tagliabue. You could see it. And Clark, in this day and age, is there a more rare commodity than unimpeachable integrity?
Absolutely right. And remember, we had Paul Tagliabue on this broadcast last year, and he talked about Art McNally and what a gentleman he was, but also the integrity he brought to that position and how he changed the officiating department all for the good. All right, final thoughts on this week, which was a very difficult week, but final thoughts?
Well, of course, I didn't see the play Monday night, Clark, at the time. I was doing another podcast. Yes, Clark, another podcast. This time,
There's another one?
Well, this is my regular one for Joe Bucks fan. And of course, we were talking up Tom Brady, and Ian Glendon likes that because Brady had a heck of a game. And I was sitting there marveling, and we saw the reemergence of Mike Evans. Well, anyway, Clark, I didn't see the play. And then when I got off the podcast, I went to put the game on because it looked like it was going to be a great matchup. And then I just froze. Clark, you never expect something like that. He's still in critical condition as we speak. All we can do is hope things turn out for the best.
It's a reminder, Ira, how violent this game is. And I don't know, you know, I understand it was cardiac arrest and it could have been some arterial situation. I think some doctors have been on broadcast this morning on national TV talking about the blow to the chest and how that can cause something like this for the heart to stop. Did remind me of my brother 3.5 years ago, had the exact same thing in a fitness facility, cardiac arrest. He was out for 6-7 minutes, was in a coma for 4 days and then came out of it and is 100% today. Certainly hopes that happens, but it reminded me also have a couple things, and I'm not jumping to, you know, I'm trying not to be extreme about this, but the Hank Gather situation, a friend of mine was covering him when he collapsed on the floor. But also, I, you know, in 1971, and Ian may not know this, but there was a game played where the Lions were playing the Chicago Bears, and it was at Tiger Stadium in Detroit. And a wide receiver from the Lions named Chuck Hughes came back to the huddle, I think it was in the fourth quarter, and he dropped, collapsed. And they rushed him to the hospital. And unfortunately, he did die. He died of what was later diagnosed as coronary thrombosis. And in that game, they played it to its conclusion. And the players were told afterwards that he had died. And I will tell you, the one thing that I thought when I watched this game, and I did see it live, you've got to send everybody home. I mean, the game means nothing. This guy's in serious condition. You've got to send them home. And fortunately, in the end, they did the right thing. But I did think it took them a long time, in my mind, too much time to make that decision.
Maybe they were waiting, Clark, 10 or 15 minutes to see if you could get a thumbs up that the guy is okay. Maybe that was the thinking. But when you didn't get that, then and the players didn't want to play.
No, that's right. That's right. And my understanding, at least, I may be wrong, was that heart had stopped for, you know, several minutes. And someone mentioned today 9 minutes. And so they got the heart going again. But I work with an ambulance association here. If that's the case, you know, it's a life threatening situation. To me, that's all I need to know. When he went in the ambulance, I go, everyone off the field, we're going home. We're going to the hospital and praying for this guy. So I certainly hope everything goes okay. But that was a difficult situation for all involved.
And Clark, what do you think the NFL will do going forward?
That's a good question. I mean, first of all, let's make sure we get this straight. We care mostly about, and everyone should, about the player. But then when you look at the fallout, what do you do with the schedule? I'm not sure. What do you do with the? I don't want those two teams playing this week. Not until this guy hopefully gets out of the woods.
Could there ever be a situation where the Bills and the Bengals end up playing 16 games instead of 17?
Well, I wondered about that, but that affects then, you know, home field advantage and everything. And all those are just sort of minor considerations when you're talking about a player's life. But in the end, somebody's got to make a decision there. And that's going to be a tough one. Yeah, my point, I at this juncture, I'd say I wouldn't play him. I just would just move on. I wouldn't play the game. But then you say, well, wait a second. Does that mean now that Kansas City has home? I mean, all that stuff is it's right. For the NFL to decide. Fortunately, we don't have to decide it here. Anyway, that's going to do it. As I said each week, if you want to listen to this or any I Test for Two podcast, well, Ian Glendon, you just tell them where they can go, okay?
Well, of course, you can go to theitestfor2.com and fullpresscoverage.com.
That's right. Otherwise, you can just tune in next week to listen to Ira, me, and Ian on the I Test for Two. Thanks so much for listening.